Welcome back in, third hour of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porther with you on this Friday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. We'll have a cue to call later this hour for your opportunity to win Preds tickets for their game Monday night coming up against the Tampa Bay Lightning. So make sure that you're tuning in for that. And right now, we are pleased to go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and bring in new Vanderbilt head football coach, Clark Lee. Clark, thanks so much for taking time to join us. We appreciate it.
My pleasure. Good morning to you guys.
Good morning to you as well. And Clark, obviously, I mean, it's been a whirlwind for you the last couple of months or so with taking the job at Vanderbilt, still having some games to prepare for with Notre Dame as well. But now that you've had some time to soak this in, what excites you the most about this job and this opportunity you now have with Vanderbilt?
Well, there's just so much potential here, and I knew that before I set foot on campus, when I was still in South Bend preparing for finishing our season. But you know, as I've gotten down here and really gotten a staff in place, like just the energy in the building, and you know, like when I get a chance to escape my office and walk down the hallway, it's just there's just so much belief and so much enthusiasm for what we're doing, and I think that's so important because, you know, the people in this building are going to touch our team every day. And these guys obviously have battled adversity here, but they are hungry and desperate to get things turned the right way. And so it's been a blast to get to work with them and to start to plant the seed to change. And slowly but surely, like we've tried to kind of erase everything down to zero and just build it all anew and redefine what it means to be a part of this program, redefine what it means to be a Vanderbilt football player. And so I'm excited in the early stages of this job.
So Clark, what's this been like on a personal level coming back to your hometown? How different is your hometown? I know you've come back a lot, but now you're living here again. You have a house. What's even campus? How has that changed? Things like that. I mean, has it been just like, hey, coming home or is it a lot different for you?
Well, if I'm going to be honest with you, I have spent my time between the hotel room and my office. I would say probably like 90% of my time. So, I don't know. I mean, you know, I haven't had to battle the traffic yet. It's been really convenient. I haven't had a chance. I've made one trip to the grocery store, which was I haven't done in a while, so that was fun. You know, there's just so much to get done for me here, and I think I'm learning how to function in this space in my new role. And so, for me, the more time I spend here in Magoogan, and just again getting to know the lay of the land, getting to know my staff, and getting to know this team, you know, that's where I'll spend probably the first 3 months while I'm in Nashville. I do look. My family is in town. They got in last night. We have a home, but we're not going to move in till July, and so we'll be looking for something temporary. I hope to get them in place within the next few weeks, but they're visiting for the weekend. So we're going to take some time tomorrow to get out and about and let them get to know their new home.
So I guess no surprise because obviously the signing day just happened. So it's been purely solo, just pouring yourself into this day after day since starting.
Absolutely. And part of that is both, you know, the work that's required. And then another part of it is just like, really, you know, you have a vision. You have a vision for what this program needs. And I have a system and a structure that I have in my mind to put in place. But executing on that day in, day out takes some time to think forward, right? Like I've got a plot and plan and I'm also learning and evolving with each day. I learn a little more about the role and responsibility and where I'm going to be needed most, where my attention needs to be. And so just having the chance to sit in this space and to continue to push that dream forward, we're not looking to be a flash in the pan here. We want to set something up that can sustain. And so for me, that requires this constant connection with that 10 and 20-year vision.
Vanderbilt football coach Clark Lee on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And Clark, it's no secret, we've had Candace Lee here on our program and talked about the commitment that's also going to be needed from the athletic department side of things as well when you're trying to build this football program. Just what have your conversations been like with her, and how encouraged are you about the future of this program from that regard?
Well, I mean, Candace is the tone setter, and you know, she's honestly, I mean, I've obviously feel strongly about this university and this program on a personal level, but you know, her role and me really wanting this job, her vision for the department, for this program, her support, there's an ethos alignment there. Like, we're philosophically aligned. You know, I mean, look, she's a competitor. She's got a great sense of humor. She's fun to work with. She brings the energy. And so she's a great partner, and getting to know her and working for her here in the first few weeks has been really, really exciting for me. And, you know, we have to, the support from administration, it really kind of follows a few paths. Obviously, there's the support of, like, the facility builds and things like that that are coming. Those things we've discussed, and we're going to be excited for that to unfold in the near future. There's already a renovation project going on underneath me in the locker room. They're creating new space there for us. That they feel like, and we feel like, is going to be, you know, a competitive advantage for us. But beyond that, the support is just, as I identify the things I need to build the best student athlete experience in the country, that I can go to Candace and Tommy McClellan and say, hey, here's some areas where we're falling short in supporting our athletes, and here are some things that we can do. And they have been overwhelmingly supportive of that. And so, to me, that's the biggest thing, because my focus right now, I mean, look, I'm excited for new structures and new buildings. The physical representation of change is important, but my focus is really on this team, and it's twofold. How do I push these guys to a higher level? How do I ask more and demand more of them in terms of their quest for competitive excellence? You know, how do I push them further, and yet, how is it that I create an environment in the same vein that where they feel more supported than they've ever felt, and they recover more quickly because the resources are put behind them? And so, to me, that's where my focus has been. And I can tell you that, you know, I've got the full support of the administration. They've been fantastic, and that's another reason why I'm so excited.
Talking with the Vanderbilt football coach, Clark Lee. Clark, this, I want to talk about this class and then in recruiting moving forward. First of all, really retained essentially the entire class, you know, from the early signing period. Why were you able to do that? Is that surprising at all to you? And then also, you said in an interview with 24/7 Sports, you used the term revolutionize recruiting at Vanderbilt, essentially. I know, obviously, Barton Simmons, Smoke Dixon in on that effort. What do you mean by that in terms of revolutionizing recruiting, and you know, how important are those guys going to be in that effort moving forward?
Well, to answer your first question, you know, I think the retention of this class had to do with the brand, the strength of the university. I think, you know, this is a great example of, you know, young people choosing a school and not a coach necessarily. And so that just speaks to, like, the success that we're going to be able to have as we get, you know, our recruiting operation off the ground here. It's been hard because, you know, I've done the best I can to, you know, at one point I was the only coach in the building, and you know, Javon Hay and Taylor Searles have done an unbelievable job maintaining contacts with this class. Also to keep them, you know, to keep them excited about what's to come. But, you know, the process of building a staff took a ton of time and continues to take time. I wanted to get that right. I wanted to be deliberate and take my time. I feel like what I know won't work here is, like, short-term fixes. There is no, like, magic formula, right? Like, there's nothing that, we're, you know, even Barton, like, getting Barton here doesn't all of a sudden change the tide for us. It's getting a bunch of smart people, enthusiastic people on a team, and giving them time to let the ideas percolate and let the energy flow and come up with a plan that we can execute on. So to kind of get into your second question, when I talked about revolutionizing recruiting at Vanderbilt, you know, I think the first part of that is just to be perfectly clear at the advantage we feel like we have in being the outlier in the conference. Like, it is such an advantage to us to have the academic requirements at this university, to be, you know, a smaller private school. Obviously, our position in the city strengthens our recruiting footprint as well, but also just the things that make us unique. Like, we want to be authentically us in recruiting because we feel like the filtration naturally, like, we are going to get highly driven, high-reaching, prideful players on this team as a result. And, you know, they're going to learn to do things on our campus. Education on campus is about investment and engagement. They're going to work hard to be Vanderbilt students there. They're going to learn to do things that are difficult at a high standard. And that type of mentality is going to carry over to their work in the building. And then what we want to do within McGugan is build a staff that when our kids come into this building, it is like a celebration every single day. The enthusiasm, the energy, they're excited to be around their coaches. The coaches are good communicators, good men, good teachers. The support staff are people that believe in this vision and really just push the program towards the vision every single day. And when you combine those two things, you have just at a baseline the chance to have a really competitive, fun team to watch. And then from there, as far as the specific recruiting elements, you know, we have to be true to our fit, and we have to be true to our footprint. There are so many talented people within a five-hour radius of this campus, and some of the best players in this program's history have been undervalued recruits that had the raw material to be NFL players. And so when you talk about Barton and Smoke and the evaluation, you know, the scouting department, those guys are going to be spending their time like looking in all corners within this footprint to find the raw material that we can introduce into this developmental program. And we feel like that concept applied over time, you know, connected also with this idea that the staff has dynamic personalities, great communicators that'll build the relationships. We feel like that dynamic, that combination of things, gives us a chance to maximize our strategic advantage, again, as that outlier within the conference.
Vanderbilt football coach Clark Lee has been our guest here on Robbie and Rexro. Clark, we really appreciate you taking time to join us. We're excited for you and the future of this program and look forward to talking to you down the road.
Hey, I love to do it. I appreciate the chance to talk about what we're doing here because obviously it's important to me and I'm so excited about it.
Absolutely. Clark Lee, Vanderbilt football coach, our guest here on Robbie and Rexro. And when we come back, we'll ask the question, who feels better right now, Tennessee fans or Vanderbilt fans, about the direction of the program and the hires that have been made? We'll discuss that coming up to begin the next segment. But right now, I got to talk to you about my friends at FanDuel. You can celebrate the 55th edition of the big game with exclusive 55-1 odds on FanDuel Sportsbook. And if you've never tried FanDuel before, new users, now's the time. You can bet on either team to get 55-1 odds. When Kansas City takes on Tampa Bay, you can bet $5 and win $275 if you pick the winner of the big game coming up this weekend. I've been betting on football on FanDuel all season long. It has been so much fun. And with the big game comes some big player props as well. Rob Gronkowski over under right now, receiving yards at 31.5. Maybe you feel like Gronk's going to have a big game coming up in this matchup against Kansas City. You can go that route if that's the route you want to go. Just download the FanDuel Sportsbook app and use promo code ROB, that's R-O-B, to get started. That's FanDuel Sportsbook, promo code ROB. You must be 21 or older and present in Tennessee. New users only. Must wager on designated boost market. Deposit is required. Max bonus of $275. See full terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. And for problem gambling support, call 1-800-889-9789. Hey, 102.5 The Game is kicking off every weekend with free beer. And who doesn't love free beer? Later in the show, we're going to have your chance to win a $25 gift card from Bavarian Beer House located at Opry Mills Mall. So we are very excited about that. Be tuned in for that opportunity to win some free beer later in the show.
Free beer.
Who doesn't love that?
Free beer is a good thing.
It is a good thing. And speaking of a good thing, I like me some Clark Lee. Nice interview he had with us in the last segment. New Vanderbilt head football coach. And it's fascinating because, look, obviously Vanderbilt, this roster, they got a ton of work to do. You don't win an SEC game this past year. I mean, they had some issues with COVID. It was a weird season, and Derek Mason gets shown the door. Clark Lee comes in. It's interesting to compare that across the state. I mean, Tennessee, another bad year as well. They were able to win some games early on, but it was a struggle. Jeremy Pruitt out, now Josh Heupel in. I wonder how differently these fan bases view the hires. Like, Clark Lee, from most Vanderbilt fans I talk to, you're excited about it. He's a young guy. He's got energy. He's got ties to the program, which leads some Vanderbilt fans to believe if he does have success, maybe he's more likely to hang around and try to sustain that over a longer period of time. Lots of Tennessee fans have met the Josh Heupel hiring with like, huh, really? Josh Heupel? Is that the best you could do in this job, sir? It's just kind of fascinating to watch the way these two hires are viewed with these two programs.
Yeah, I mean, I would, if the question is which fan base feels better right at this moment about their football program, I think it's definitely Vanderbilt.
Yeah.
Because I think they're excited about the hire. Clark Lee was one of the three or four coaches most mentioned, and a lot of people thought he was a favorite from the start. And like you said, we've talked about the whole be careful about, you know, like the Tennessee guy, oh, T. Martin or whoever. Right. You know, it's not necessarily Peyton Manning, bring him in to be the coach. I mean, it doesn't always work out. You want to try to get the best coach. But again, I mean, Clark Lee was a runner-up for the Boston College job a year ago. He was going to get other opportunities. And I do think about, and this is going way into the future, projecting success and longevity, but you know, Pat Fitzgerald at Northwestern is absolutely the model for this. Pat Fitzgerald, who, by the way, just signed another mega contract after another great year for Northwestern, after NFL teams. And he's been, I mean, Michigan has come after him. NFL teams have come after him. That's what you want. You want, I mean, and Pat Fitzgerald was a great player at Northwestern in the 90s. And you want that coach who, one, is good and has that long view, but also who might be like, you know what, I'm staying here in my hometown with my alma mater. I mean, there's something to be, if you can get Vanderbilt going to a certain point and you can be a 6-6, 7-5 program that rises up every few years, maybe to a little bit better than that, which is what Northwestern is, there's a lot to be said for that.
Yeah.
No, you're not playing for national championships, but there's a lot of value in that, and I think obviously that's the hope. Tennessee, to me, is just, I mean, both fan bases had a brutal fall.
Oh, yeah.
But Tennessee, I mean, not a lot of excitement about the hire. Sanctions are coming. And it just, there's obviously a totally different level of expectation and a totally different size of fan base and all that stuff for Tennessee. But, like, the next few years, I bet you they have some good games against each other, which, frankly, shouldn't be the case.
Let's go to our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Ben, text in. Until Vanderbilt spends the money and puts the effort forward to actually make steps with facilities and the culture and everything involved, I'm apathetic to these placeholders they shuffle around every few years. Ask me again in 5 years when it's probably not better. I'd rather root for a team that has a chance.
Okay, that's fair. I mean, I think certainly a part of this is that promise of there's change coming. I think there is change coming, but until some people see the shovel in the ground, some people might need to rub the dirt all over their face to believe it's real. You know, I mean, until you get to that point, I totally get the skepticism. You're talking about a stadium that hasn't been, well, we had Dan Fouts on earlier.
Sure did.
Love some Dan Fouts, and he was an amazing quarterback, and that team should have won it all in 1981. Well, that's the last time that Vanderbilt Stadium was touched, okay, like significantly, 1981. So I get it. I totally do. I don't know about this whole shuffling play. I mean, you had I know James Franklin got out quickly and went to Penn State, but other than that, I mean, you know, Bobby Johnson was there for a long time, right? And Derek Mason had a long tenure. I mean, you can have a long-term coach who doesn't go nuts and win 9-10 games a year, and I understand how that's also frustrating for Vanderbilt fans, but there are programs that have the exact same, not the exact same, but basically the same profile that have figured this out. There's no reason Vanderbilt shouldn't be able to figure it out.
Let's go back to the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Nate texts in and says, I'd have to say Vandy fans because Vols fans are never happy nor excited unless they do the hiring, even when they're usually not happy with their coaches. Most Vols fans being unhappy with the hire is probably a good thing. Every hire that they've made that they're happy with hasn't worked out lately.
Okay, well, you speak to this then, Vols fan. What was the excitement level? So scale of 1 to 10, excitement level of Lane Kiffin.
Oh, it was about a 9.
How about Derek Dooley?
About a 3.
Butch Jones?
About a 3.
Really, that low?
Yeah.
I thought maybe that'd be like a 5.
My first thought when they hired Butch Jones was, oh, the guy from Cincinnati. Cool.
Hey, now.
And then
Jerry, now.
It's interesting I say that because if they had hired the guy from Cincinnati this year, it'd have been like, yes!
Yeah.
The guy from Cincinnati, come on!
Or you know, Brian Kelly or yeah. Mark D'Antonio. There's been some pretty good
yeah.
ones.
But I was not – now, I can't speak for everyone, but I was not overly excited about Butch Jones.
Okay, we know Greg Schiano is a negative a million.
Yes.
What about Pruitt? What was the excitement level for Pruitt?
2. And yeah. that was only because he sounds like me when he talks.
See, but – I actually disagree. I don't think it was that low. I think after
with Pruitt?
After everything that happened. Well, look, after everything that happened and after his press conference, there was higher than 2. It was higher than 2. But anyway, what we're basically refuting this texter because I don't think the excitement's been super high in
they
a
haven't
while.
Been able to get their top guy in a long time.
Right. But he is right. I mean, it's time for someone to overdeliver. Someone at Tennessee in the football building, overdeliver. Earn your, or even just like earn your salary.
Yeah, that would be step
one. Try that.
Like, try earning what you've been paid. That'd be great too. Yeah, I mean, it's look. I mean, if you're a Vanderbilt coach or a Vanderbilt fan right now, I do. I understand the skepticism, and I'm largely the same way. Until I see the change being made, I'm still going to have an open mind to. Yeah, there's a lot of lip service that we've heard out of Vanderbilt.
But
the last
15, 20
years.
Have to admit that the lip service is way different.
It's different now.
I mean, we're talking some pretty strong declarations
sure.
that it's coming. I get it. Wait and see
well,
if it
they're
comes.
Strong
they
enough
are
to
fixing the,
point, the
locker room right now.
They're strong enough to the point where if you don't do it,
oh, yeah.
you look really bad.
Right.
Which makes me think they're going to do it.
Right. Like, you don't step out and say some of the stuff they have said. And I'm talking specifically about Chancellor Daniel Diermeier and AD Candace Lee, if there isn't something real behind it. And again, they are working on the locker room now. It's late, but it's also, I mean, it is a COVID year. I
yeah.
mean, that's part of this. But no, I get it. I mean, it's been so long, and it's been so frustrating for Vanderbilt fans. And I think apathy is definitely a part of both fan bases right now.
Not apathetic last night for the Nashville Predators. It was all over the map on Pred's Twitter. Last night, from
look at that
doom
transition.
And gloom
look at that transition.
To pure jubilation. The Predators get it done, 6-5 in overtime. Philip Forsberg, a monster night. 5 points, 2 goals, 3 assists. He gets the game winner in overtime. And to help us talk more about it, when we come back, we'll be joined by the legendary Terry Crisp. That's coming up. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth are with you on this Friday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. A gigantic comeback win last night for the Nashville Predators. And to help us talk about that, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and bring in our man, Preds TV analyst, Terry Crisp. Crispy, what's going on, my man? How we doing?
Good morning, gentlemen. Well, my coffee's tasting a little better today. Tell you that much on my second cup, and I'm not sure who was playing the piano last night when they lifted it off the shoulders of the Nashville Predators hockey players, but it sure sounded good.
It did sound good, and Crispy, it was amazing. I mean, you're down 5-3 heading into that third period, a lot of things going poorly for you in that game. You find a way to battle back and tie it up, and then Forsberg wins it in overtime. I'm a firm believer that not all wins in the NHL are created equally. And some just mean more than others. What can a win like that, in the fashion the Predators did it, do for this team moving forward?
Probably the biggest thing, they're professionals. And they know one game doesn't make a season. They know one game isn't the all to end all. But the one game against a team like the Florida Panthers, who are a good team, they've come in here 5-0-1, hadn't lost in regulation, still haven't, by the way, and have got depth that they got in young guys. And then to win it in the fashion that they did, they worked hard, went into a bit of a lull, a tailspin, came roaring back at the end, and then stayed with it. And even though we sort of keep shooting themselves in the foot with those dumb, bad penalties they're taking, last night was a night that they dug in, and the guns came to work, the cannons came to fire at both teams. And Forsberg and Duchesne last night, especially Forsberg, was not to be denied.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing, Crispy. I mean, obviously they're still giving up, what, 37%, I think, on opponents' power plays. There's still issues. But this is, and it, like you mentioned, DeShane, a guy who's, I think, been playing well and hasn't been rewarded, and he gets rewarded as clutch a moment as you can have. So do you buy into the idea, you know, when you were coaching, if your team got a win like this, maybe struggling a little bit, do you buy into the idea that this can be a turning point or can be something that vaults a team?
Matt, I can tell you one thing. When I was coaching, I sure bought into it. As a player, you know, you got to go back out and work. But as a coach, when you're looking for anything to hang your helmets on, anything to give you a spark to tell your team that you keep saying it's going to turn, it's going to come, if we keep working away at it, it'll all sort out itself and we'll be okay. This is the type of game you can walk in this morning into your dressing room and you can show them physically on and film or whatnot, here's what it takes to win. Here's the penalties you don't take. We've talked about it. Here's how you end a game. Here's how you get the puck to the net. Here's how you keep whacking at it till it goes in. So as a coach, yes. As players, they got to be relieved, especially Matt Duchene, who's had 100 scoring chances and has worked as hard as he has, finally got rewarded. And Philip Forsberg and Yossi and Ekholm and the boys taking control of the engine last night and making it run.
Preds TV analyst Terry Crisp on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And Crispy, you brought up Philip Forsberg. Look, we've seen the talent for a long time, obviously, and he's been a very, very good player for the Predators. He looks different to me this year in terms of the way he's playing all over the ice, the 200-foot game. What have you seen out of Forsberg so far this year, obviously culminating last night in a 5-point performance?
You know what? I don't want this taken wrong or misconstrued, but I see affirmative leadership coming from, I think he's matured over this last summer. He's matured over what he's seen happen to our team last year and didn't happen. And you know, they were maligned for it. Forsberg is one of the targets that had to produce and do what he has to do to be a leader. But I think more so now, off the ice as well as on the ice, if you listen to all of Philip Forsberg's interviews now, he talks like a leader. He talks the truth and is very blunt about his game, the team's game, what guys have to do, doesn't name them. I like what I hear from Philip Forsberg, and I like even more what I see out on the ice this year. And I've always said all along that I don't think that Philip Forsberg, I don't know how to say this, I don't think he had realized what a leader he could be. Like, we kept hearing about Shea Weber, and we kept hearing about Yossi, and we kept hearing about other guys. And I'm not sure if he stepped back, being in Forsberg, and said, you know what? I'm in that category. I'm as good as these guys. I'm in that elite division when I want to play my game and do it. And I think right now, Philip Forsberg has realized that he is a leader.
Crispy, the discussions of goalies, it can always be tough because, you know, it's like, is a guy struggling or is he getting hung out to dry over and over again? I think you could look at UC Saros last night and say, boy, there was some tough moments in front of him, you know, that led to some of those goals. But Pekarinen comes in, really stabilizes things, has a great third period. Do you think that at this point maybe it's time to give Pekka a little bit more chances in goal? Do you think he's playing a little bit better than Saros?
Yeah, I'm not going to second-guess the coaching staff. I don't second-guess the armchair expert. But I've always been a Pekarinen fan, and I'm still a Pekarinen fan. And I look back over the history of Pekarinen, the games that he's won, the things that he's done for this hockey club. And, yes, I think that he is still the key cog in this outfit. And I can tell you right now, as a coach, yeah, I understand running Saros, and last year in the playoffs, et cetera, you're looking for a goalie. Peck is getting a little long of tooth, but Peck is not finished. And I feel comfortable as putting my coaching hat on saying, you know what, yeah, I would not be afraid to run Pekarinen in the next bunch of games in a row if it stayed the way it is. So we know he's capable of it. So we know it. But it's a nice feeling to know that also, when the need arises, you can throw Saros in, and the team feels, you know what? Yeah, the same as when we're in front of Pekarinen, we can win this game with him in our net. That's a pretty good feeling for players and coaches to have.
Crispy, the team has talked about special teams needing to be better and the power play, a couple of huge goals last night. What did you notice on the power play last night from the Predators? Why was it different? Why were they able to convert on a more consistent basis?
We were snapping a puck around. We were moving it. We weren't doing that stupid grab the puck and one guy holds it for 45 seconds along the sideboard and another guy holds it in the corner for 10 seconds and the clock's running down. They were snapping the puck around. They were moving it. It was going from ba-ding, 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 and making Florida guys chase it, get to it, and then the guys were pulling the trigger. Now, there was a lot of bodies because Florida plays the old Ken Hitchcock. He believes in six goalies out there, the goalie and the other five guys all jammed into the crease and try and put the puck through it. That's what Florida was doing. We were getting the puck through. We were getting it only because we were shooting quicker, and we weren't holding on to it as long, making our passes and making our shots. And I guess what I'm trying to say is we sharpened up and started to move the puck rather than hold on to it. And the longer you hold it as a player, the more they can get set up and the less chance you have of getting your shot through or making a good pass. Last night, our guys were sharp on it. And when they got the opening, they took the shot. And that's what I've been screaming all along. All your great goal scorers and your good goal scorers will tell you this. Every goal scorer, good goal scorer, has to be greedy. And by that I mean their goal scorers. If they have the shot, take it. Don't feel bad that you didn't pass it to your buddy on a two-on-one when a defenseman was sliding to block it. Pull a trigger on it. That's what I want to see. You're a good goal scorer, be greedy. Take the shot.
Okay, so what are you screaming when you watch the Preds on the penalty kill? And we can bleep you if needed.
Well, you know what?
Watch it.
The funny part about I know it's a family show. My job is in the NHL. I made a living killing penalties and playing defensive hockey, so it's not glorious. But the one thing you do learn is that when you're a penalty killer, when you go over the boards, the first thing you look at is your partner. You say, they're not scoring. We're going to give our team a boost. These guys are not scoring. And you tell the two defensemen going with you, hey, you two, these guys don't get standing in front of our net. These guys don't get a free walk down the wing, off the wing, into our net. They pay a price, no matter where they are. And I'm a firm believer in attacking the puck. And I watch Dallas do it. I watch Tampa do it. And I watch Florida do it. Their penalty killers don't stand still. They're coming. They're moving. When the puck moves, they're going at it. They don't give you a chance to make a good pass. That's what I'd like to see from our penalty killers is be aggressive. Aggressive in a system. And I always relate back to when I was with Fred Shiro, the Russians came over to play us. And the Russians had a great penalty killing system that they worked. But the key to it was the Russians were all good skaters, and they were all fast off the mark, and they were all fast when they made their move to get back to where they should have been again. So I guess boil it down, be aggressive. Be aggressive. Be in their face. Don't give them a chance to do what they want to do.
Preds TV analyst Terry Crisp has been our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. Joe,
you got one more thing for you? Well, before you go, what do you think of Dan Fouts as a quarterback, Crisp?
You know, hey, guys, let's be honest. I love football. Neil O'Donnell is my mentor because every time there's a football game, I go and sit with him and I drive him crazy with 1,000 questions. But like Pete Weber will tell you, when I first came here and sat down beside him and we talked football, and I said to him, Pete, what is SEC? So that tells you what I know about football, but I love it.
Terry nice. Chris, the legend, as always, has been our guest here on Robbie and Rex Show. Crispy, thanks for joining us, my man. We appreciate it.
Anytime, fellas. Stay safe, out there.
Absolutely. Terry Chris, one of the best in the business. And when we come back, Joe Rexroad's been one of the best in the business at Preds Pick the Click, brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka. And it's that time of the day for Preds Pick the Click. Be the first caller at 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025, for your opportunity to guess the goal scorer for the game tonight for the Predators against the Florida Panthers. That's next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
To find the back of the net in tonight's Preds game. Robbie and Rex Road make their picks to click and welcome a listener to do the same. Pick to Click is brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka, the official vodka of the NHL.
And it's that time of the day here on Robbie and Rex Road. Time for Preds Pick the Click, brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka. The Predators taking on the Florida Panthers again tonight. They get a big 6-5 win last night in Florida. Get back in the win column. First win of the season on the road. And now we have an opportunity to guess the goal scorers for tonight's game for the Nashville Predators. And our listener participant today is on our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Jack from Franklin is today's participant. Jack, what's going on? How are we doing?
Hey, man, good to hear from you. I'm feeling Granlin tonight. I think he's been coming up. He's been looking good so far, and I think tonight's going to come together for him.
All right, Jack, I'm rooting for you very heavily in this competition because Joe Rexroad and the success that he's had has really become quite repulsive to me in this competition, so I'm pulling for you and Mikhail Granlin tonight, Jack.
I appreciate it, man.
Absolutely. We good appreciate luck, Jack. You taking time to call in. Jack is going with Mikhail Granlin, so that is 2 days in a row that we've had a listener going with Mikhail Granlin. And, I mean, heck, with the way Granlin's been playing, 2 days in a row, probably a good strategy with him. He's been playing very well.
Yep, that's a good pick. He's been close lately. He scored some this year. He'll score again. But will he score tonight?
That's the question.
This is the question.
That is the question that we will find out tonight against the Florida Panthers. Joe Rexroad, you've had really a nauseating amount of success in this competition early on. 4 times you have selected the winner, including last night, Matt Duchene. First 2 goals of the season. You selected him yesterday in the competition. So I will let you go first with the success that you've had. Joe Rexroad, your Pred pick to click for tonight against the Florida Panthers.
So first of all, to recap the scoring in here, 4
oh my gosh.
For me. Porth has won. He got Yossi last night. And
you can put it on the board! Yes!
Oh, yeah. Oh,
nice. One of the all-time great homer announcers in sports. And you've got 0.
Thank you.
But it's very early. So I think
it's not that early anymore, but yeah, thank you.
That's true. Actually, it's going to be 19% of the season over after tonight. 19.6. So I'm kind of thinking of this now in terms of who do I need to help?
Okay.
You know, I mean, I think if we all on this planet think in terms of who can I help, we'd be a better world, wouldn't we?
Probably so, yeah.
So I helped Matt Duchene last night, got him off the schneid. Although Adam Vingan likes to take credit with his negative article.
Yeah.
But I'm going to say that my picking Matt Duchene got him too. So who do I – who needs one? Who needs one?
Well, I know who needs one, but I don't know if he's playing tonight.
Yeah. No, because I can't go there because we don't know what his status is. Someone I think is due – and, you know, he's been fine so far, but I just think he's due to find the back of the net. I'm going to go Victor Arvidsson.
Ooh. I swear, if Victor Arvidsson scores tonight after I picked him yesterday, I'm going to be highly upset. Surprised you didn't go with Dan Hamwee.
Hamhouse?
Hamwees?
Go ahead. Porth's going to hit the button.
Dan Hamwees. I don't know if I've ever heard anybody call him that. Hamhouse was the best one.
It's Dan Hamwees. Dan Hamwees.
And I said, it was you do actually, sound like Jim Nantz on hole 6 at the Masters.
Dan Hamwees.
Beautiful. Oh, no selection of Dan Hamwees.
Cinderella story at Augusta. Dan Hamwees.
Thank you. Very nice. Joe Rexroad going with Victor Arvidsson in the competition. Ryan Porth, your Preds pick to click for tonight's game is who?
I'm doubling down on what I said on Call Your Shot Friday. Philip Forsberg.
Okay.
He was unstoppable last night, and I think he's going to carry it over and score another one tonight.
Are you mad that you let him pick before you?
Yeah, I got to quit being nice. I really am.
Have you been picking last all this time?
I think
not
he has.
Every time. Not every time.
Most
times.
Keep
though.
Track of it. I don't want anybody talking about unfairness or anything like that.
Give me Matt Duchene. I'm going Matt Duchene 2 games in a row.
All right.
I had Arvidsson yesterday. I swear to you, if Arvidsson scores tonight and Duchene doesn't. You and I are fist fighting on Monday morning to begin the 6 o'clock hour.
Well, look, I got Matt Duchene going for you yesterday. So
thank you.
You know, so maybe he'll carry it over
and
to
then
tonight.
Now if he scores, we're actually going to be, well, had to get him going for you to get you launched off in this competition.
Do I get an assist if Duchene scores for you tonight?
No.
Do we count assists in this?
At least got some
secondary
work to do.
Assist.
All right. So
you know who had a lot of assists in his career? Dan Hamwees.
Yeah, he did.
By the way, we started talking about Dan. I seriously still can't say his name right. So all last year, I'm like, I'm just not going to say it. Dan Hamhuis.
That's good enough. Yeah.
Dan Hamhuis.
Hamhuis. It's not as complicated.
But you don't. But okay. But
Dan Hamhuis.
But you don't say. You say Ham Use, not Ham Hughes.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, anyway, for people who weren't listening earlier, he was brought up because NHL TV showed that he was one of.
What about Mark Z?
Yeah. Yeah, those two.
Merrick Zidlitsky.
Merrick. And by the way, they spelled Merrick Mark, but that's okay. NHL TV, still good stats. That Ham Hughes was one of the other guys who had 5 points in a game.
Yeah. Dan Hamhuis.
Franchise history. So Forsberg joins that distinguished group of yes. Ham House, Zidlicky, what, JP Dumont. Who else?
Forsberg.
No, there's somebody else, right?
Dan Hamhuis.
No, Yossi? Yossi, no?
I don't think so. Did Yossi get five?
I thought there was another name
he
up there.
He may have.
You were so distracted by Mark
so
Z
distracted
and
by
Ham
Mark
House.
Z and Ham House. And I just, you know, I don't even know anymore. All right, so you're going with Victor Arvidsson, Ryan Poore, Philip Forsberg. I'm taking Matt Duchene, and Jack from Franklin is taking Mikael Granlund in this edition of Preds Pick to Click, brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka. We wish you all good luck in the competition with the possible exception of Joe Rexroad. Joe, we talked about it a little bit earlier in the show with the Nashville Predators. The type of win that they had. I mean, look, let's be honest. There are still a lot of issues with this team last night. I tweeted out in the second period. This team's got some gigantic issues, which I realized they came back. That's great. But they still have got some pretty large issues with this group. The penalty kill is not good right now. They had some defensive miscues last night, had some problems with managing the puck. There's still a lot of work to do. But to their credit, you find a way to come back, tie that game up, and ultimately win it in overtime with a nice assist to Joel Quenneville on the game as well. Just an incredible decision to challenge that play at the end.
Why didn't we ask Crispy about that, by the way?
Oh, man.
Next week. Let's remember it.
Just an incredible decision by Joel Quenneville. But I'm also of the belief, I've said this before, like, I don't think all wins in the NHL are created equal. I think some mean more than others. I think this one has a chance to be a point you look back on at the season and say, okay, that's where the Predators not necessarily figured everything out, but that was a big moment in terms of keeping this thing steady, keeping this thing to where you're right around, you're battling and kind of fighting and scratching your claw on your way to that bubble line that they're hopefully going to work their way towards as they continue to go along here. So I'm not saying that they're going to fix all their problems after that game last night, but I thought it was a huge moment and a huge difference from going from 4-6 to 5-5.
It was a fantastic comeback. It was, to me, an example of why this team is worth watching, because Philip Forsberg is worth watching.
Yes, he is.
Just he's tremendous. It was, you know, it was a big deal for Matt Duchene, who has not been getting rewarded appropriately for how he's been playing. And then last night he is, and you can't ask for a more clutch goal than, you know, the second one he got to send it to overtime. I still think this team has issues. And I remember some games last year, Robbie, where we said that too. There were wins for that team last year. I was like, okay, maybe not quite this dramatic, but some big wins where maybe they came back or someone played really well who hadn't been playing well. We said, could this be it? And they sort of continued on that, you know, step back, step forward, all that stuff. But maybe. I mean, certainly you've got to feel way different in that dressing room today at 5-5, having done what you just did, than 4-6, and probably talking a whole bunch again about, let's stop taking penalties, let's kill a couple every once in a while. That'd be okay to do. And what's going on with the goalies?
And now the question is, what do you do with it if you're the Predators? Do you come out tonight and respond in the right way and put together another effort where you're walking out with 2 points? Because if you come out tonight and you just lay a stinker out there against Florida, last night doesn't mean a whole lot in the grand scheme of things. So you got to come out and replicate that effort that you had in the third period and in overtime. I'm not saying you got to come out and Philip Forsberg's got to score 5 points. That's not going to happen again, most likely. But try to play with a lead. Like, they've played barely a little bit over 37 minutes with the lead this year.
By far the lowest.
By far
NHL.
The lowest in the NHL. Get out there and score the first goal. Play a little defense and see where things fall after that. That's the next step for this group, 5-on-5.
Are you starting Pekka-Rinne if you're John Hines today?
I am.
Yeah, I am too.
I'm very interested to see what he does there.
A little bit more of a look right now. Give Saros maybe a little bit of little bit more time sitting than maybe you planned.
With the move he made last night, if you went back with Saros, you're probably not as concerned about the wear and tear on him, just based on bringing him out before the third period. But with the way Pekka played last night, I'd leave him in there and just see what he's got. And then if you want to reevaluate heading into Tampa Bay next week, you can do that. But I'd go with Pekka Knight. So it's going to be fascinating to see what the Predators do on that front. And what else is going to be fascinating? When we come back, we'll be joined by our man Dan Orlovsky, ESPN NFL analyst. Lots of Dans on the show.
It's today. The Dan Show.
It is the Dan Show. Dan Fouts, Dan Orlovsky.
Has Dan Patrick broken any more news about fast food cheating in college football? We get him on.
That'd be new. Hey.
Dan Hamweeks.
Get the button rolling over here today. We'll have Dan Orlovsky coming up next. Also, we know you're going to be watching the big game this Sunday, so do you think you can predict some of the game outcomes? If you do, play Super Picks now at thegamenashville.com. You predict the answers for the game questions that we put together, and the person that gets the most correct will win a large Arctic cooler full of prizes. Get your picks in now for Super Picks, sponsored by Boom Boss, Craft Pizza, and Tap House at thegamenashville.com. The contest will close at the scheduled kickoff time. Must be 21 or over to enter the contest. We'll be right back. Robbie and Rex Road, live from the Wholesale Link Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.